Beloved MTV VJ, music exec, and radio personality Matt Pinfield has spent almost four decades in front of and behind the mic. He signed bands, interviewed Beatles, and had songs written about him. But now, he's having a different conversation. He's talking with friends and supporters across the entertainment industry about their journey and how he's found his voice again, being open about his recovery. This is Sound, Sobriety, and Success.
You probably know her as Kate Pearson, the beloved character she played on six seasons on the TV phenomenon This Is Us, which earned her nominations for both a Primetime Emmy and two Golden Globes. She's also the author of the number one bestseller, This Is Me, Loving the Person You Are Today, and is working on her debut album. Please welcome Chrissy Metz. Chrissy, so great to have you on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is exciting.
You know, I mean, I know more about your history, but to a lot of people, you seemed like an overnight success, but it was definitely a long path to get there.
Oh, yeah.
So what was your life like leading up to that series?
Wow. Well, I was just a big girl from a small town, and one of five, and I lived in Gainesville, Florida, and my sister actually wanted me to take her to an open call, and we went to this random Holiday Inn open call, found a manager, which I reluctantly auditioned for because I was just taking my sister, found an agent in LA, moved to LA, and became an agent for 9 years. And then it wasn't until about almost the 13th year of being in Los Angeles that I booked the show, This Is Us. So I took many detours, lots of uncharted territory, and a lot of heartache, a lot of patience, a lot of uncertainty, and being very broke. So a lot. I'm trying to give you the cliff notes, but yeah, a lot went down in those 13 years.
I mean, I think what's so great about that story is just it's all really about perseverance and you know, really following that dream, because I think for people to get frustrated that want to do something that they love, like acting like you do or something else in entertainment, you know, it can happen at any age. I mean, that's the thing that even for me, it really kicked in for me in my 30s. You know what I mean? It wasn't, you know, it wasn't in my early 20s, even though people thought I was in my early 20s. I maybe looked at because I was a baby-faced, chubby kid or young guy. You know what I mean? So, I can totally relate, you know, and I think that that's fantastic. You know, so you got this series. It was certainly emotional and connected with people on so many different levels. Did you expect the show to become such a huge success? What was your initial feelings about it?
I remember being at the table read with all of the actors who were cast, but people can get recast at table reads all the time. But we were sitting around this massive conference table and all the executives and everybody were there. And I just remember feeling like this beautiful synergy of the right place, the right time, the exact right cast and executives, everybody. It was like lightning in a bottle. And we all, after the table read, even the executives who have read it a bajillion times, were very emotional watching the whole cast, you know, read it together. And we all were. And we were like, okay, wow. Like, we know this is written so beautifully. And if it can be executed properly, this could be really special. But we had no idea, really, because, you know, you could make beautiful works of art and people never see it, unfortunately. That's sort of the name of the game in any industry. And we just knew that whatever that time and place was, that there was something special. But for people to see themselves in these characters and for people to open their own hearts and minds and to be introspective of the dealings that they are, you know, having to contend with on a daily basis through our characters and the way that it was written so beautifully, we're like, oh, yeah, this is something special.
Yeah, it absolutely was. Now, did you expect Kate and her story to connect with so many people? Your character is amazing.
You know, I am so grateful. And I had always hoped and dreamed, because I always felt very alone. I was like the chubby girl in my friend group growing up. I never really felt understood in my family. And obviously those are my things and my issues and I say issues, it has a negative connotation, but my journey in discovering who I really am. And knowing that, like, the more specific we got in Kate's journey and her story, the more relatable it was to every other person. And it wasn't just women. And it wasn't just plus size women. It was men. It was young kids. It was every single demographic who's like, oh, I've lived life on life's terms and it can be really hard. And so I never imagined it would be so such honest connective tissue that would sort of be between Kate and everybody else in the world that never saw themselves on television, but it makes complete sense because we just never saw a character like Kate. And we were talking about a woman who comes from a lot of guilt and shame, but she's living life and trying to do it the best way she knows how, but she does it imperfectly. And she continues to pursue her dreams. And she's a full-fledged woman who becomes a mother and has a special needs son and, you know, had found love. And so many times in so many auditions that I had, it was like, oh, the big girl, the plus size girl is just the butt of the joke. She can't be pretty and she can't be prettier than the lead character, you know? So I think it made such an impression because finally women could see themselves through a real character.
Absolutely. It certainly was that way. Now, how do you feel about the show ending, both the show itself and how they finished Kate's story?
Well, I'm sad. I think anything that's really wonderful and beautiful, anytime it comes to an end, there's a grieving process. I mean, that's how I feel about one of my favorite bagels at my favorite bagel place. Like, I'm like, I don't want it to end. And then on such a massive scale, like a show that changed so many people's lives and very much so mine, I definitely had to grieve, and I still am. And I miss the cast and I miss going to work. I don't miss waking up at 3 a.m. every morning. That's the one bonus. But I think the way that, I don't even want to say the way the show ended, but the way that they chose to sort of close a chapter on the Pearsons' life was really beautiful, because that's what's so cool about the show. And it wasn't linear, that there's lots of life and a lot of stories to continue to tell and to even think about what the Pearsons are doing as individuals as a family. But I think it was really beautiful to see that there was this chapter in the big three and the siblings' lives that had a bit of a closing of a chapter. And you don't always get to see that. So, yeah, I mean, I think Dan Fogelman and the writers could do no wrong.
Yeah, I mean, they just did such an incredible job. And and I'm glad the show lasted for the six seasons that it did.
Ooh, you know? Me too.
Really did.
Me too.
So talk to me. I want to talk about your latest film, Stay Awake, because your character in that, Michelle, she's a single mother and an addict. And tell me about what drew you to that project.
Yeah. So Jamie Sicily, who is the writer-director, he had been working on the short film for some time. And, you know, I think a lot of people now know about the opioid crisis. But even when he started working on the short film, it was sort of like these whispers of what's going on and something, there's a massive epidemic going on. And I sort of, you know, I have food issues, so I know what addiction is like, and I know addicts and I'm friends with them. And I have such a big heart and empathy for people who are struggling with any particular addiction. So when the short film came out and then I met Jamie, I just instantly fell in love with him. And then to know that it was loosely based on his true, you know, story, I was like, oh, this has to be told. And it has to be told in a way that the addict isn't villainized. And I think it's really important because I don't believe that there are any bad people. I think that they're troubled. And I think the way that she was portrayed and she was written was so important. And also to see in the way that it was told that this woman was trying and she loves her sons and she can't quite get it. And it doesn't mean that she doesn't love her sons and that she's a villain, but that there are repercussions, you know, unfortunately. So it was she is a complex character, as we all are. And I just love Jamie so much and I value his opinion and he as a writer and a director. So it was really no question for me to want to be a part of the project.
You know, I mean, it's so important that it's, you know, addiction from a different viewpoint. And, you know, as a guy who was a chronic relapser for so long and then finally really got it. And, you know, when I say got it, we never always completely have it because it takes maintenance. It takes being involved in the program and for me on a daily basis, staying connected to my higher power and people that are in the program and doing all the things that I have to do, steps, living by the principles. You know, these things are all real, but I love the fact that it portrays the character Michelle in a different way, because people do want to change. And I think, you know, chronic relapsing is part of quite a few people's stories, you know, and I'm very open and honest about mine. And but so tell me about what you did to prepare for the role of Michelle.
Yeah, well, like I said, I do have my own food issues and I've been in a 12-step program myself. So that was a really big foundation in understanding, you know, there are people who aren't addicts or who don't have these types of issues, whether it's drug, sex, love, you know, codependency. They don't quite understand. You know, I've had friends come to meetings with me and they're like, huh. You know, it's a concept that if you don't really understand, you don't really live, it's hard to really get the idea that you're just sitting in a room and why can't you figure it out? And why can't you put the food down? Or why can't you put the drugs down or the plug in the jug, as they say. And so that understanding and that in a foundational way was really important. But also, I just spoke to a lot of people. I watched a lot of intervention. I watched a lot of documentaries about the opioid crisis and, you know, spoke to a few people who were in the medical world about what they really do to your body. And, you know, so yeah, it was sort of a mixture of things because I really, really wanted to get it right because it's so important.
Yeah. I mean, and you certainly did. So what do you feel there's something you understand now that you didn't before you worked on the film and read the script about addiction? Was there something else that you learned from playing that?
Yeah. Film? I mean, I could cry thinking about it because, you know, that my two sons played by Wyatt and Finn, when you see it, like I remember watching the film back on a Zoom with all of them because we were in different parts of the world. And not only did they do an exceptional job, but I realized that like I know my food issues, obviously people get worried or they're scared or they're, you know, not sure that I'm taking care of my body. And so as far as opioids go and an actual drug addiction, I could see the way that it really can affect your children, your family, and that stress that it causes. And then of course there's the idea of, you know, Al-Anon and codependency and all that. And so it's very layered, but I think I sympathize with the people who are affected by the addict behavior in a way that I didn't really understand before. You know, when there are scenes where the boys are making their own food and they're cleaning up and they're really like raising themselves, it's just heartbreaking to me because I do believe Michelle, you know, as we all know, addicts do want to change. I don't think anybody is like, yeah, I can't wait to be an addict for the rest of my life, or not in recovery, I should say. So seeing that from that perspective was really eye-opening in a way that I didn't quite get before.
And what do you hope people walk away getting from this film?
Well, I sure hope they have a deep feeling of empathy and sympathy for an addict, for the family, for the people who are affected by that, but also that there's a very serious crisis going on specifically with opioids and the way that they are overprescribed and accessible in ways that they really shouldn't be. And it's just heartbreaking and it's devastating because it's affecting so many people's lives and killing people at rapid speed. So yes. It's unfathomable. You can't even understand it. So I hope that there's even just an awareness, you know, around this epidemic.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. And, you know, like you said, I'm just like you have, Chrissy, I've watched a lot of documentaries and I'm blown away by, you know, what the pharmaceutical companies have done and just, you know, the stories are heartbreaking. So, I mean, any way that we can bring attention to that is great. Now, what do you think people most misunderstand about addiction itself in your eyes, Chrissy?
I think that most people misunderstand addiction as it being a choice. Like, well, if you wanted to change, you would change. And I do believe that to some extent, like you do have to put the work in, right? Like if you want to change, there has to be work. Like when they say, you know, faith without works is dead, you know, it's like, it's true. But at the same time, I think it's hard when people are associated with an addict that they think that it's personal, that the, oh, but you're doing this because you don't love me. And if you love me, you would change. And it's just not personal. Like, we come into this plane of existence with a lot of issues, and we accumulate trauma, and we, you know, we are an onion just trying to be peeled away. And it's not even about who we're becoming. It's about, you know, unbecoming the things that are plaguing us. And so I think if there could just, there could be a little more of an understanding that it's just not personal, and nobody's doing it because they don't love you enough, or, you know, they're not changing purpose, not changing purposely to hurt you. I think that's just a general rule in life, that things are not personal, but they sure do feel that way. So yeah, I think empathy and sympathy are
two of the most important things. Yeah. I agree with you. Hey, Chrissy. So, you know, both Michelle and Kate go through major emotional turmoil in their stories, and you do such an incredible job of portraying them. And I think they're such important characters. And I have to ask you, like, is it exhausting playing those type of characters, and how emotionally taxing is that on you when you're taking on those roles? I mean, I can only imagine, but I just wanted to ask.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I have always been very emotional. I've always been very in touch with my feelings, whether they were anger or sadness or fear or, you know, rage, whatever the feeling was. Like, I feel deeply. And I also empathize. Like, I really genuinely care about people, and I love people, and I want to understand them, and I want to be understood. And so I feel like in many ways, it's exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, because it feels very cathartic, whether I'm going through an emotion or I show up to work one day and I'm having, you know, issues within my family, or there's illness with my mom or whatever it could be. I just have to show up authentically, and that's good enough. And so, yes, it can be taxing. It can be, because you're like, whew, I'm spending, you know, 15 hours a day really feeling these emotions, but it's not really any different than how I live my life in many ways. So it's actually been very helpful for me, because when I was a teenager, I was like, nope, I don't have any emotions. I was very angsty and very misunderstood. So I think maybe it's coming, having the pendulum swing all the way on the other side to come back to the middle.
Yeah. And I think it's great, because I mean, I think it served you well. And I think it's being emotional and being there for others and is really an important thing to be in touch with that. I think it's so important, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to congratulate you on both those roles, because I just thought that they were both incredible. Let you know that. So, I mean, you like me, obviously, music is very important to you, and, you know, you love music. So can we talk about, you're working on an album, and tell me how music played a role in, again, like for me, it got me through so many things. You know, it wasn't a negative thing. Music got me through life, saved me as a young guy, and I made it the focus of my life, and I'm very grateful for that. But, I mean, it's still to this day is just like, you know, music gives me the most, so much pleasure and joy.
Yeah.
Like the love of my, you know, my daughters and other things. But so I wanted to ask you about that. What was the thing that drove you and your interest in music?
Well, my parents always listened to a lot of music in every genre. I mean, I grew up with Motown and the Doobie Brothers and, you know, Elvis and Trisha Yearwood and, like, you know, just sort of every genre of music. And it was always very fulfilling. You know, I would either feel very deeply through the song that I was listening to, or, you know, joy, sadness, grief, whatever loss, whatever you're going through. But, like, everything for me is music. If I'm in a conversation with someone, I'm pretty sure there's going to be a song that comes to mind, and it can be an obnoxious thing, but I've always been that way. And when I was feeling misunderstood, I could turn on music and I felt understood. So yeah, music was always my first love, and I would sing and, you know, make songs up on my little boombox, like, you know, in middle school. And then all the cool kids were joining band, and my mom couldn't afford an instrument. And all the piccolos and the flutes were taken, and they were like, oh, do you want to play this big baritone? I was like, absolutely not. I was like, I'm not going to be the chubby girl with the big baritone. I'm not going to do it. And my mom couldn't afford it anyway. And so I joined choir. And then I realized, oh my goodness, this communal aspect of music of, you know, 25 kids singing to sound like one voice was so magical. So it really started there that I knew that I wanted to pursue music, and whether I was songwriting or singing a song or in choir or at church, whatever. And then my manager was like, yeah, we're going to forget the whole music thing. Just go and do some like TV and film. Like, let's put you on TV. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So it was sort of pushed to the wayside. And then I, met Kelly Clarkson's musical director, Jason Halpert, at a Billboard event. And he's like, literally, God told me to come and talk to you about music. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? He's like, I know I sound crazy, but my wife told me I have to come and talk to you. And so he was the one that set me up with my first songwriting rights in Nashville. And so in between the seasons of the show, I would come and write songs. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm the most fulfilled and happy sitting in a room with four strangers writing about the things that I want to talk about. And, you know, it's scary because when you're portraying a character, there's somebody else's words, it's somebody else's journey, but your own is like, oh, wow, I'm very exposed. And so I'm just so grateful that I'm able to do that now because I know what music meant to me. And so I hope to impart that on other people.
I think it's great. How's the tour going? Has that been fun to do?
Oh my gosh. It's so, I could cry. I mean, my feelings are always right here anyway. You know, when I hear from people before or after the show who are like, that is my story. I've never felt like I was ever heard or like I didn't think anybody else went through that. And they're crying and we're crying together. And it's such an amazing cyclical energy exchange that it's very powerful. Like it is, I get it why people have withdrawal when the tour is over or you know, they're not performing live anymore. You know, I'm sure you get it. And so it's really special and it's not lost on me that every night that I get to go and do that is such a gift.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. It really is. And like I said, music is magical.
Yeah.
It brings so many people joy and, you know, it just makes them not feel alone in so many ways. I think it's one of those things that
that's right.
You relate so much to lyrics. Now, tell me about your book, too, which is number one bestseller. That was incredible. Just talk to me about how that came about and what made you decide I'm going to write this book.
Yeah, you know, like I said, when I was younger, I never really felt heard. I never felt like valued or important. And I think it's hard when you're one of five children, but at the same time, I didn't even know how to understand my feelings. But what I knew was that every single thing that we go through in our lives is necessary. And that, of course, as an adult, I understand it's not what happens to you, but for you. And how do you learn from it? And so my agent was like, oh, are you interested in writing a book? And I was like, listen, I at some point would love to, but I don't know if I have anything to say. And she's like, are you kidding? And so I thought a while about it. And I was like, okay, if I can impart my life lessons thus far about how I have gone through a divorce, how I was mentally and emotionally and physically abused by my stepfather, and then also forgave him after, you know, everything that we went through together, these are really invaluable lessons that I think could really touch people's lives and hopefully make them feel less alone. And so I just started writing the chapters as life lessons and whatever happened, what did I learn from it? And what can hopefully the reader take away from it?
Yeah, I think it's phenomenal. I mean, I just think it's great because I think you touched so many people and I think they've reached out to you, right? You've heard from quite a few people.
All the time. I mean, people are still buying the book and it's like almost 4 years old and it's so like overwhelming. And I was so scared to put it out because, you know, it is very, I feel very exposed, but like I said, the more specific you get with it, the more people relate to it. And I still have people coming up to me who have dealt with divorce or, you know, suffering through their parents remarrying and having a new stepfather or a step parent, you know, all the things that we as humans go through. And I'm not any better or more equipped. I'm just being honest and forthright about what, how I went through it.
Yeah. Well, it certainly is. It's touched a lot of people. And I want to also say and ask you this. Well, first of all, you know, your success came as after years of hard work. We We talked about that right at the very beginning. Now, are the rewards for you different from what you pictured them to be on the way through this journey?
You know, I never had expectations. I never wanted to do it for fame or fortune. I really didn't. I really just wanted to connect to people. And it's so funny because I, as kooky as this sounds, it's going to sound so kooky. I had a psychic reading with someone and they said, oh, in a former life, you were like a court jester. And you always made people feel better and you made them feel less alone and you inspired them or you made them laugh when a time of war or like a really tumultuous time. And I was like, whether or not anybody buys into that, that feels very right for me. I was sort of the entertaining diplomat growing up, you know, when my family would, my siblings would fight and I would act silly or do a Robin Williams or a Jim Carrey impression or something, or I'd sing a silly song. And I'm like, oh yeah, like I believe in my heart, like I'm supposed to bring joy to people. And whether it's through sorrow, because right, all comedy stems from tragedy anyway, that feels so right for me. And so I never thought I would make a living out of it. I just knew that like, that's just what I'm going to do, no matter if somebody wants to pay me for it or not. It's just who I am. And so I had no expectations. Like when I booked the show, I had 81 cents in my bank account. Like I was broke, ready to move back to Florida. And so I really was like, well, I can only go up from here.
Like, yeah, right. Exactly.
So cool.
And I love that. You know, that's why when I talk about this, the name of the show, which is Sound, Sobriety and Success. Success doesn't mean financial. It means success in a very different way, you know?
That's right.
Because that's personal for everybody, but it's not about that. It's about living with yourself. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and listen, know? I was absolutely broke and in debt and all those things, and so grateful that I get to be paid for something I love to do. But that, you know, I also tell people, and it's sort of a barometer for me, that would you still do something if you never got paid for it? Are you still passionate about it if you never got money for it? And that was the case for me.
You and me both. I mean, I could so agree with you about that. Cause I mean, music, I'd be like telling somebody the history of some artist, you know, like, or doing some kind of thing. Tell them you should be listening to this. The passion was there no matter what. So I've got nothing but gratitude that I've been able to do this for so many years, but I feel exactly the same way you do, Chrissy, about it. Where in Florida are you originally from?
I'm originally from Gainesville, Florida. Go Gators.
Oh, Gainesville.
Yeah.
Go Gators in the legendary town of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
That's right. I mean, every time I go there, I pass by his childhood home. That's for sure.
Yeah. Which is so cool. I mean, he was truly one of the greatest, you know?
I mean, it's
amazing.
Still boggles my mind when I listen, you know. I'm like, my boyfriend and I, he's an even bigger fan, which is hard to believe, of Tom. So it's, it's pretty cool.
I always say, you know, I got to see him when I was really young because I discovered him on that first album before people really knew who he was. And I was, you know, in very early high school. And then we all went to see him play a show in New York, like about six of us. You know, we got a row of tickets. They were like $5, $4 to see him play. And then the third album, Damn the Torpedoes, blew up. But always one of my favorite American songwriters and performers, and just so great.
Special.
But listen, I want to thank you so much for being on here and doing this with me today.
I'm grateful to be here. Thank you for wanting to talk to me.
Yeah, and I want to talk about this. First of all, we should let everybody know your book is still available. This Is Me. And also, the film is called Stay Awake, we were talking about, and it's written and directed by Jamie Sisley, starring Chrissy, Wyatt Olef, and Finn Argus. It's on the festival circuit at the moment and will hopefully be available very soon, and I know you will love it. And for the latest on your tour and your music and that album that you will be coming with soon, you can go and check out ChrissyMetzMusic.com. So it's ChrissyMetzMusic.com. Chrissy, thank you so much for doing this today. It was really great to have you on the show. I just want to let you know that.
A pleasure.
And I'm going to come see you perform next time you're in Los Angeles.
Oh, I hope you do.
I absolutely will. So, Chrissy, thank you so much for doing this, and I'll see you soon. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you.
If you or someone you know is struggling with alcoholism or addiction, Music Cares operates a mental health and addiction recovery program that understands the challenges music professionals face, no matter where they are in their career. Learn more, including if you're eligible, at musiccares.org. That's musiccares.org.
Sound, sobriety, and success with Matt Pinfield. Produced by Jake Urbanek. Engineered by Darren Silva. Jerry Onzaldo Booking. Bill Royal Research. Susan Aksu, Marketing Production Assistant. And Laura Keeney, Marketing. Sound, sobriety, and success is a Bennstown McVeigh podcast production.